Now I have to say it again. This is volume 10, December the 25th, 1910. So Louisa sees Jesus as an infant, and she says he was so beautiful as to enrapture her with sweet enchantment. Especially then, he rendered himself more lovable because with these tiny hands he took little nails and he nailed me with a mastery worthy only of beloved Jesus. Now, can you imagine an infant doing that? It's beyond imagining. Then he filled me with kisses and love, and so I did with him. So that means suffering and then comfort. So after this, Louisa said, I seem to find myself in a grotto with my newborn Jesus. And my little Jesus said, my beloved daughter, who came to visit me in the grotto of my birth? Only the shepherds. I want to give you this as number one. The shepherds are number one. Only the shepherds were my first visitors. We wouldn't say only. We would say the shepherds were my first visitors. The only ones who kept coming and going, offering me gifts and their little things. They were the first to receive the knowledge of my coming into the world because the angels appeared to them. Do you remember? Mm-hmm. And as a consequence, they were the first favourites to be filled with my grace. This is why I always choose poor, ignorant. Now, ignorant is not a negative word there. It means uneducated. Abject people. Now, abject people are needy people. And I make them portents of grace. Because they are always the ones to be more disposed. Now, notice that. Now, he's going to be talking about worldliness in the priesthood. And these people that he says are the ones who recognize him the most are the opposite of worldly people. So they're more disposed, the ones who more easily listen to me and believe me without raising so many difficulties as the educated do, so many quibbles as the priests and the theologians do. On the contrary, this is what the learned do. So I want to give you a number of references there at the side. James 2:5. This is for the poor, ignorant, abject people who become portents of grace. Luke 21:3, Luke 6:20, Luke 4:18, Proverbs 19:17, and Proverbs 21:13. Okay, now in the next paragraph, we're going to get the second group who visited Jesus. Then came the Magi. Okay, so you can write above that foreigners. Foreigners or Gentiles. Okay, but no priest turned up. You see that? Now you need to add the word Jewish. No Jewish priest showed up because you're talking about the birth of Christ. While they should have been the first to form my cortege. In fact, more than anyone else, according to the scriptures, which they studied, and they knew the time and the place because they were able to tell the Magi, weren't they? And it was easier for them to come and visit me than the Magi who had to come from a foreign country. Okay, so you're talking about Matthew 2, 5 to 6. The Magi telling the priests telling the Magi where to go and find Jesus. But they, that is the priests, did not move, nor did they trouble to take even one step to follow the traces of my coming. This is a most bitter sorrow for me at my birth. Because in those priests, the attachment to riches, because at the time of Christ, the priests were very wealthy. They were landowners. You see why the subject is coming up? Mm-hmm. They were attached to what we would call vested interest. You need to put in the word vested interest. They were attached to families because they were the heads of families and to exterior things. Their attachment was so great as to blind their sight like a glare, as to harden their hearts and render their intelligence dazed to the knowledge of the most holy and the most certain truths. Now, first of all, I want to give you Matthew 15, the chapter. Well, it really would be 1 to 10. 15, it would be 1 to 10. And then the whole of Matthew 23. In Matthew 15, 1 to 10, Jesus criticizes the leaders at the time. And in chapter 23, he condemns them outright. Okay, woe to you for this and that and the other. Okay, now, what Jesus is saying there is that the condition of the priests at the time he was born, it meant that they were lost in this world, in material things, and in making money, that there was no way they were open to the supernatural. And that's precisely what he's going to say about the priests, Catholic priests in Italy in 1910. Nothing has changed. Okay. These priests were so engulfed in the base things of the earth. And you remember Jesus said you cannot serve God and money. Okay, I've only remembered that now, so I didn't look it up. They were so engulfed in the base things of the earth as to never be able to believe that God, you can't say God in English, that God could come down upon the earth in the midst of so much poverty and so much humiliation. And this not only at my birth, but also during the whole course of my life, because they resisted Jesus the whole way. And they resisted him because he had the wrong address. He didn't have any education, according to them. They didn't give him his authority or degrees. He had he was followed only by the poor, the blind, the lame, and so on. So everything about him was wrong as far as they were concerned. When I performed the most sensational miracles, no one followed me. Matthew 3:6. They actually plotted my death, which is the Matthew 3:6. And they did kill me on the cross. And after using all of my art in order to draw them to myself, I put them into oblivion, and I chose poor and ignorant people as my apostles. See the principle he's laying down. Forming my church in them. Watch this. I segregated them from their families because they were all married except John and Thomas. Will you please make sure all mobile phones are turned off? I segregated them from their families. I released them from any bonds of riches. You see, this is the problem that's actually in Italy. I filled them with the treasures of my graces and I rendered them capable. Now, you'd have to underline capable of governing the church and souls. Now, notice he had to remove all worldliness and all business and all attachments for them in order to be able to have them able to do what he wanted. So now, from the next line, however, we're dealing with priests of today. However, you must know that this sorrow of mine is still there. Because the priests of these times, that's 1910, have banded together with the priests of those times. They have been holding hands in their attachments to family, to vested interests, to exterior things, and they care very little or not at all about that which is interior. Now, notice if you care nothing about what is interior, you cannot serve God. Even more, some have degraded themselves so much as to make even the lay people, the secular would be in the world, in other words, outside the church, the unbelievers, we would say, to make even the unbelievers understand how unhappy they are in their state. Now, if they are completely unhappy in their state, A, they either haven't got a vocation, or they're living their vocation absolutely wrongly and they have not developed a spiritual life. Now, to try and serve God without a spiritual life is totally impossible. So everybody sees how unhappy they are, lowering their dignity down to the bottom and below the secular or the unbelievers themselves. Ah, my daughter, what prestige can their words still have among people? Now, you knock the S out of the people, because the word people is plural. Even more, because of them, the people keep deteriorating in their faith and they keep falling into the abysses of the worst evils, groping their way in the darkness because they see no more light in the priests. Oh, dear. You remember the blind leading the blind and all that? Mm. So Matthew 15:14. Matthew 23:14. And Matthew 5:8, only the pure in heart see God. So now the priest has become the opposite of a testimony. He's actually a block to the laity. This is the reason for the necessity of houses of reunion of priests. So this is what Jesus proposed, that the priests would leave their families and that they would come and live together under the same roof so that they would have a proper religious schedule to, and they would support one another. There was horrendous resistance to what Jesus wanted, of course, because none of these men wanted to give up their prestige, their honour, their businesses, their money, their salaries, all the envelopes under the table, if you can use an Irish expression, and all the rest of it. They didn't want to give that up just for the sake of saying prayers. Okay. So this is the reason for the necessity of the houses of reunion of priests, so that freed from the mist of darkness, that's all the business with the world, by which he is invaded, free from families, free from vested interest, and free from the cares of exterior things, the priest may give out light, the light of true virtue. Okay? Now, the light of true virtue is Matthew 5:14. Let your light shine so that people will see. And therefore, the people may turn back from the errors into which they've fallen. These reunions are so necessary that every time the church has reached the bottom, by the church you mean the clergy, this has almost always been the means in order to make her rise again more beautiful and majestic. Now, in one sentence there, Jesus is summarizing the history of the church. And if you go back through the history of the church, you'll find that various saints set up communities of men. The community of the Jesuits, the community of the Franciscans, the community of the Dominicans, the community of the Augustinians, and so on and so forth, to try and get the priests to live a spiritual life. That's what he's saying. Okay. So Louise's reaction was, "My highest and only good, sweet life of mine, I sympathize with your sorrow, and I would like to soothe it with my love, but you know well who I am, how poor, ignorant and bad I am, and also extremely taken with my passion for obscurity." So she's saying, why are you telling me this? I can do nothing. "I would love it if you would hide me so much within you that no one might ever again believe that I existed. And you instead want me to speak about these things which so much grieve your most loving heart and which are so necessary for the church. Oh my Jesus, to me speak of love and go to the other good and holy souls and speak about these things that are so useful for your church." So she says, "I'm in a bed, do you mind? What can I do?" I love that, don't you? "And Jesus said, my daughter, I too loved obscurity." That's his time, his 30 years in Nazareth. "But there's a time for everything." Uh-oh, that's Ecclesiastes 3, 1 to 8. ECCL, Ecclesiastes 3, 1 to 8. "There's a time for everything. When the honour and glory of the Father, as well as the good of souls, became necessary, I revealed myself and I did my public life, and that's the way I act with souls. Sometimes I keep them hidden and other times I manifest them." And you must be indifferent, you must be free, in other words, for whatever is asked of you. "Even more, I bless your heart and your mouth, and I myself will speak in you with my own mouth and my own sorrow." So he blessed me and he disappeared. Now, if Louisa thinks she's getting off the hook, she's not. January the 8th at 1910, we're still talking about priests and we're talking about their faith is almost gone from all their business in the world. And look at the heading, the family kills the priest. You wonder why the Lord kept them celibate. Okay. I now write things of the past in order to obey, Louisa said, and I'll explain myself about these reunions of priests that blessed Jesus wants. I love that expression. Since a holy priest came last November and told me to ask Jesus what he wanted from him, my always lovable Jesus said, the mission of the priest chosen by me will be high and sublime. It is about saving the most noble, the most sacred part of the vine, that is, which are my priests, the vine or the church, okay, who in these times have become the laughing stock of the people. Isn't that sad? The most appropriate means would be to form these houses of reunion of priests. We would say a congregation of priests, okay. So as to segregate them from their families because the family kills the priest. Now, by the family killing the priest, it's that the family has given all the responsibilities to the priest and therefore he's not able to do any of his priestly duties. While he should promote it, push it, and also intimidate it. I love that. The priest should promote the family, push the family, and intimidate it really means keep it in tow. If these are saved, the people are saved. Louisa continues, I received four communications from Jesus regarding these reunions. I wrote them and I gave them to that priest. So I did not think it was necessary to repeat them in these writings of mine. But obedience wants me to write them and I will make the sacrifice. So if you want a heading for the next section, it is that faith is dying. The priest must revive. Faith is dying, so the priest must revive. So number one, my adorable Jesus told me, the mission I will give is high and sublime in a special way for priests. Faith is almost extinguished among the people. Now notice that the people need the priest to be a model. They need him to have a testimony. That if he's talking about God, he actually has an experience of God. So faith is almost extinguished among the people. And if there's any spark left, it is as though hidden under the ashes. That means that the state of the church was pretty awful. Okay. The life of priests, which is almost completely secularized. You see the problem? And maybe worse than that, he said. As well as their example, lock out the S, their example, which is not good, lend a hand to extinguish this spark. And what will happen to them and to the people? This is why I have called him, that's the priest who visited Louisa, so that he may interest himself with my cause and with example, with words, with works and with sacrifice, that he may amend the problem. We would say amend in one word. The most suitable, appropriate and effective mending would be to form houses of reunion for diocesan priests within their towns. Now you're told that the problem is among the diocesan priests and not among the priests in community. The priests in community already have their discipline. Segregating them from their families. Now you're going to hear this repeated over and over. Because the family kills the priest and causes the darkness of vested interest, the darkness of the appreciation of mundane things, the darkness of corruption. You see, it's the corruption of business, okay? To be cast into the middle of the people. In sum, it takes away all the prestige and the splendor of the priestly dignity, and it makes him become a laughing stock for the people. I will give him intrepidity, courage and grace if he gets down to work. In other words, I'll help him if he gets to work. So number two, this was the second message. My highest and only good continues to speak to me about the great good that will come to the church from forming these houses of reunion. The good priests understood will become more good. Those who are imperfect and lukewarm and relaxed will become good. Those who are really wicked will go out, Acts 5:1-10, Ananias and Sapphira. If you're not going to be in, get out. You see, it's actually if they've gone so far that they are not really ready to come back and live a priestly life, it is more decent for them and more honest for them to actually go back to the world, isn't it? Mm. So, and this is how the body of the ministers of my church will be riddled, is the word here. We would say sieved. Do you remember Jesus saying to Peter just before the Passion, Satan is going to shake you all in the sieve. Do you remember? Mm. And they will be purified. And by means of the purification of the chosen part, the most sacred, the people will be reformed. So Jesus is looking after his church. Now, I've told you many times what the problem in the church is, that it has been invaded by communism and by Marxist atheism. And so all the materialism and everything else gets into the church and the immorality. And by 1910, it's Pius X that's in charge of the church, because he died in, it's Pope Pius X. He died in 1914, and he wrote an encyclical condemning all the stuff that Jesus is talking about here. So Louisa says, in the meantime, I could see before my mind, as if inside a picture, I could see Corrado and the priests who were to lead this work, though it would be directed by Father G. The priests named were Father C, D, B, D, C, F, and so on. In other words, she doesn't want to give away the names of the priests, followed by others. And it seemed that they were to put in a share of their possessions. Now, the ones who are attached to possessions are not going to do that. In other words, I have to let go of something. But you see, to make a commitment to something, you have to give something, don't you? I mean, when a man and woman get married, they give everything to each other. Okay, when you join any kind of a society, you're expected to give some kind of a contribution. You've got to give something. So they've got to give a share of their possessions. Now, a share of their possessions, of course, would mean that they had the land to build the houses. Okay, or some of them could give the money. Jesus added, it's necessary to weave this thing well, so as no one may escape, and to procure the necessary means so as not to burden the people. Now, what Jesus is saying is that the priests have enough money and resources themselves. They are not to ask the people. Okay. It's very interesting, isn't it? And so the parish incomes should be tied only to those who will participate in these reunions. Now, this is a message from heaven. And what is the message saying? Only pay the priests if they join these reunions. Leave the rest of them. Yeah. Don't give them any payment from the church. Isn't that interesting? Yeah. And these will maintain the choir and all of the other offices pertaining to their ministry. At first, this will provoke contradiction and persecution, but mainly among the priests themselves, the ones who don't want to change. However, soon things will change. The people will be with them, generously providing as they usually do. And they will enjoy the peace and the fruit of their toils. Because for those who are with me, I allow that everyone be with them. That needs to be underlined. Mm-hmm. For those who are with me, I allow that everyone be with them. Isn't that fantastic? Now, I want to give you 1 Samuel 20:22. That is God saying, those who honour me, I will honour. Okay, but it's exactly the same thing. Then Jesus threw himself into my arms, Louisa said, all afflicted and supplicating so much as to move to pity even the stones. And then he said, tell Father G that I beg him. Now that should be a small h, because it's the priest. I supplicate him to help, to save my children and not to let them perish. So there's the Lord pleading with a priest to save the church. Isn't that something? So the third message she got was that Jesus continues on the same topic. With the fathers there present, I saw the heavens opened and my adorable Jesus and the celestial mother coming towards me with the saints looking at us from heaven. We don't think of that often enough, do we? No. The saints actually looking at us and wanting to be involved. And my kind Jesus said, "My daughter, tell Father G that I absolutely want this work." Talk about the divine will revealing itself. They already begin to raise difficulties and to tell him that it takes nothing but intrepidity. In other words, get on with it and stop thinking of the problems. It takes intrepidity, courage, and lack of self-interest. It is necessary to close one's ears to all that is human in order to open them to all that is divine. Now put an NB beside that if you want to live in the divine will. If you're always going to be listening to what people say, well, people say everything. And what they don't know about you, they'll make up. Okay. And if they can't accuse you of anything, they'll make it up. That's what they did with Jesus and everybody else. So we should close our ears to all that is human and open them to the divine. Otherwise, the human difficulties will become a net that will keep them entangled in such a way that they'll not be able to get out. And I will justly chastise them, rendering them the rags of the people. How's that? But if they promise to get down to work, I will be all for them, and they will be nothing but the shadows which will follow the work so yearned by me. Not only this, but they will have another great good. In fact, the church needs to be purged, and it needs to be washed by the shedding of blood. Now, always when the church is in trouble over the centuries, it was always a persecution and the martyrs that purified the church. Because she has dirtied herself very, very much to the point of giving me nausea. Now, you know that it was the communists and the Freemasons that brought in homosexuality into the clergy. But in the places where they will purify themselves in this way, I will spare the blood. What more do they want? Then turning around as though looking at one of the priests, Jesus added, I choose you as the head of this work. Now, poor Louisa has to tell him. Because Louisa is the only one who sees it. Okay. I choose you as the head of this work because I have cast a seed of courage into you. This is a gift. And I do not want you to keep it uselessly. Now, notice gifts have to be used. Do you remember the parable of the talents and so on? Up until now, you have wasted it in frivolous things, in foolish things, and in politics. He does not want priests involved in politics. Now, one of the problems that Pope John Paul II had when he began to try and do something about the crisis in the church after the Second Vatican Council was priests involved in politics. Okay. Because you can't get more worldly than that. And these have repaid you by embittering you and by giving you no peace. So now, enough, enough. Give yourself to my work. Use the courage I have given you only for me, and I will be all for you. Now notice this is Jesus speaking to an individual person, that if you give yourself all to me, I give myself all to you. You wouldn't mind him addressing that to you, would you? I wouldn't either. And I will repay you by giving you peace and grace. Now, grace and peace, if you read the letters of St. Paul and the letters of Peter and James and the other in the New Testament, they always wish the church grace and peace. Because grace is the fullness of salvation and peace is union with God. I will make you acquire that esteem which you have been fishing for back there. Oh. So the priest has got involved in politics and all this kind of thing, looking for status. And Jesus says, I'm the only one that can give it to you. And you've not obtained it in the worldly sense because God has blocked it. But rather, I will give you not human esteem, but divine. So which do you want? Do you want a little bit of esteem for now or for eternity? And then he said to Father G, my son, courage, defend my cause, sustain, help those priests whom you see a little disposed for this work. Now notice the minutest door has opened. Promise every good in my name to those who will commit themselves. Isn't that something else? And threaten those who cause contradictions and obstacles. Tell the bishops and the leaders. The leaders have got to be higher than the bishops, haven't they? that if they want to save the flock, this is the only means. Now, does God know what he's talking about?
Yeah.
It is up to them to save the shepherds. Now, you see, it's the Pope and the cardinals who must save the bishops. Okay. Now, the Pope is supposed to save the leaders and the led. Peter was told, look after the sheep, the shepherds and the sheep. Okay, they have to look after the, what is it? The sheep and the lambs, excuse me, yeah. Yeah, so the shepherd has to look after the sheep and the lambs. So he has to look after both. So it's up to them to save the shepherds and up to the shepherds to save the flock. And if the bishops do not place the shepherds in safety, how can the flock be saved? So I want to give you as reference there the book of Ezekiel, chapter 34. It's all about shepherds and sheep. And it complains about the shepherds looking after themselves. That's Ezekiel 34, the whole chapter. And Jesus took up that chapter in John chapter 10. And again, it's the whole chapter. So it's John 10, Ezekiel 34 and John 10. So the fourth message was, having heard about the difficulties of the priests in forming the houses of reunion, I was praying to good Jesus that if it was his will that it be done, he should dissolve the obstacles which were preventing such a great good. In other words, save the priests from having to make any effort. Is that going to work? And my adorable Jesus said, my daughter, all the obstacles come from the fact that each one looks at this thing according to his own conditions and dispositions. And naturally, they encounter 1,000 laces and stumbling blocks which prevent their steps. If all of us want to form some kind of a union and each one says, what's in it for me? We're not going anywhere, are we? And that's what Jesus is talking about here. But if they looked at this work according to my honour and glory, and only for the good of their souls and of the good of the souls of others, all the laces would, now notice the laces, they're not big, they're little things, would be broken and the obstacles would vanish. Yet if they commit themselves, I will be with them and I will protect them so much that if any priest will try to oppose or hinder my work, I am even disposed to take his life away. Do you think he's serious about this business?
Yeah.
Absolutely. You can't get more serious than that, can you? Then all afflicted, my beloved Jesus said, "Ah, my daughter, do you know what the most insurmountable stumbling block and the strongest lace is? Mere self-interest." In other words, it's self-love. What's in it for me? How can I benefit from this? Self-interest is the woodworm of the priest. It renders him like rotten wood that is fit only for burning in hell. That's strong language, isn't it? You have to add the word self to the next line. Self-interest makes the priest the laughingstock of the devil, the mockery of the people and the idol of their families. Isn't that something else? In other words, he's saying what's happening among the priests in Italy is they've actually become playthings of Satan. That's very scary because Satan's object is to destroy the church, of course. Therefore, the devil will put many obstacles to hinder their work because he sees that the net in which he has kept them chained and enslaved to his dominion. Uh-oh, would you ever write Kingdom of Satan there? Kingdom of Satan, his dominion, is being broken. So this is still a battle between Christ and Satan, isn't it? And this time he's fighting a battle for his church. So tell Father G to infuse courage into, you have to put into, those whom he sees disposed and not leave them until he sees that the work has started. Otherwise, they'll just keep planning and they'll not conclude anything. In other words, if you want to stop a work from really going on, start a committee, because the committee will have meetings forever and they will have discussions forever. They'll have objections forever. And if somebody says, let's go forward and do something, you're blocked and blocked and blocked and blocked. Okay. So he says, tell them to get on with it. Let him tell the bishops not to accept new ordinations if they are not disposed to live segregated from their families. In other words, here is a message from heaven to the leaders of the church. Don't even ordain them if they don't agree. Tell them also that many will deride him, make fun of him and discredit him, but he should not pay attention to this. Suffering because of me will be sweet for him. Now, the reason for the mockery and the derision and all the rest of it is that the demons are sitting on the shoulders of the worldly ones. And you see, if we only had eyes to see that the people who actually attack us like this, it's not them, it's the demons who are trying to pull you down. So unfortunately, January the 10th is the same thing. We're still talking about the priests. So this is January the 10th, 1911. Continuing my usual state, I was praying my beloved Jesus to dissolve the obstacles which prevented these reunions and to manifest to us the way which best pleased him. Blessed Jesus came for just a little and he told me, my daughter, the point which I most care about and which I cherish the most is to detach the priest perfectly, that means completely, from his family. Let them give everything they have to their families. Now that's the bit, you see, that's going to make the difference. If the priest gives back all his worldly goods, keeping for themselves only that which is personal. Okay. So you can see why the Lord prefers to call people who are poor. They have nothing. They're not going to have these problems. Okay. Let them give everything they have to their families, keeping only for themselves what is personal. And since they are to be maintained by the church, you see, that's the church's law, that the laity were to look after the priests. So what's their problem? Justice demands that things must end up there where they came from. That is, everything which they may have must serve to maintain themselves and to expand the works for my glory and for the good of the people. So the church is set up in such a way that the people keep the priests looked after, and therefore the priests should get on with the work of looking after the church. Otherwise, I will not render the people, knock out the S all the time, I will not render the people generous towards them. Put an NB beside that. That's a very important statement, isn't it? Notice that the generosity of the people towards the priest is God's gift to the priest. Isn't that amazing? Not only this, but they themselves will separate from their families with their bodies, but not with their hearts. Now, if a lady gets married and she goes to live with her new husband, but her heart is at home with her family and she doesn't actually leave the family, is she going to be able to form a new family? No. That's why even Genesis said that you must leave father and mother and cling to the new person, because otherwise you can't form a new entity. Okay, so if these people only leave their families with their bodies, but they're still involved in everything, that's nothing. So I want you to put beside that Deuteronomy 6, 4 to 10. This is the bit that the priests are sinning against. You must love the Lord your God. Deuteronomy 6, 4 to 10. You must love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your mind, and with all your being. Now, the priests are not doing that, and therefore the Lord is getting involved. Because you know from the book of Deuteronomy where this text comes from, that the Lord is a jealous God. He doesn't want Satan interfering in his business, okay? So, if they haven't made the break, therefore, he said, 1,000 avidities, I want this, I want that, I want the other. Who can make more profit? The huffiness among them, if one is assigned a more lucrative position than somebody else, so as to be able to give their families. They themselves will see in practice how many evils will come if they touch this most essential point. How many disunions, jealousies, rancor and the like. So he says, you've got to cut off from business if you're a priest. Okay. So Now, this is Jesus talking. I am content with having fewer of them rather than having this work, so much wanted by me, ruined. Ah, my daughter, how many Hananiahs will come out? Oh. Hananiah is a false prophet that you'll meet in Jeremiah chapter 28. And Hananiah opposed the true prophet, who was Jeremiah. And he was misleading the people with false messages. And Jeremiah confronted him in public. And when Hananiah absolutely wouldn't back down, he said, before the year is out, you will be dead. And he was. In other words, the Lord took him, which is what Jesus is referring to in these messages, okay? How many Hananiahs will come out? In other words, when this really gets going, the false ones will get out. And how well will they know how to defend, to support and to excuse this so well-liked idol of self-interest? Now, notice he's calling self-interest an idol, something you give your soul to, that you worship. If only with those who consecrate themselves to me, only with those who consecrate themselves to me do I have this misfortune, that instead of caring about me, about my honour and my glory and about the sanctification which befits their state, they use me only as a cover. Ah. Why do they use him as a cover? It's because everybody trusts them because they're a priest. So Jesus is literally being used while they are doing Satan's work and not his. While their purpose is to care about their families and their grandchildren. Isn't that interesting? It is not so for those who give themselves to the world. Rather, they try to strain their families. And if they cannot pull, they arrive at denying even their own parents. You have that even in the gospel, haven't you? That somebody would put their money into the treasury and call it Korban, dedicated to God, and therefore they wouldn't give their parents anything. But when the priest does not occupy himself with my glory and with the offices pertaining to the priestly ministry alone, he is nothing, watch this, but a dislocated bone which gives pain to me, pain to himself, pain to the people, and renders his vocation a frustrated one. He's a pain. We actually use that expression, don't we?
Yeah.
Sometimes you say in the neck or elsewhere. Okay. So the dislocated bone is that 1 Corinthians 12:12-30 describes the church as the body of Christ, hence the image of the bone. 1 Corinthians 12:12-30. And since when a bone is not in its place, it always gives pain. And by not participating in the humours of the body, with time it withers, and it is necessary to sever it. That's John 15:1-5. The branch that bears no fruit is cut off. Remember that? It is necessary to sever it because of its uselessness, as much as because it gives pain to the other members. It is the same with these priests. That's very strong language, isn't it? When they do not occupy themselves with me alone, being like a bone dislocated from my mystical body, we would say, they become withered. In other words, they lose their faith, they lose their vocation, they lose everything, because they do not participate in the influence of my grace. And I hold them and hold them. But if I see their hardness, that means they now close to grace. I cast them away from me, and you know where? Into the deepest hell. Isn't that frightening? Now, during the reign of John Paul II, there were a couple of famous Jesuit priests in Middle America, okay, in the Sandinista government. And they actually got involved in politics, and they actually got to the point where one of them was made prime minister. And John Paul II told them absolutely they were to get out of politics. And when they absolutely would not listen to him, he said, you'll have to get out of the priesthood. And when he made an official visit to the country, they treated him abominably. Abominably. And the people saw what happens to a priest when he gets involved in politics. One of them actually became prime minister. And they did everything to dishonour John Paul II that they could think of, including when he got on the plane to go home, they would not give clearance to his aircraft to take off. They left him sitting on the tarmac until they decided he could go. I mean, you wouldn't do that to anybody, you know. So I'm giving you that example so that you'll see that the language Jesus is using here, he knows what will happen if they get involved in this stuff. And of course, the warning, this was written before the incident I've just told you.
Yes.
And so it is described perfectly what actually happened. They really upset John Paul, the Pope. Yeah, they really upset him. Not because of the personal interest, but because they were disgracing the church. Yeah, they did terrible damage to the church. And they didn't repent. So he dismissed them from the priesthood. He said, "You, as secular people, you can be involved in politics. As priests, you can't."
That was liberation theology.
Yes, it was liberation theology, yeah. Nicaragua, I think, is correct.
They were punished afterwards, though, with the floods and everything.
Yeah. In other words,
the elements.
The person in heaven agreed with JP. Yeah. God doesn't take that. That's why you're told here that they would be in the deepest hell. It's incredible language. So we either take it that the Lord is serious or he isn't. So what I mean is that when we're told to do something from heaven, that the church has to take note of it. Very often she doesn't.
The word is powerful.
Exactly. So let's read the last little piece of this. And then he added, write this. Let them tell the Father to whom I entrust the mission for priests to remain firm on this point and to make it untouchable. In other words, it's not to change. Yeah. Tell him also that I want him on the cross always crucified with me. In other words, he's got to take what comes. Okay. Unfortunately, the next one is still about the priests. You know, and we'll get it behind us, don't worry. But you see, I don't know if you've noticed this, but you get a whole group of messages all on the same theme. And often half a class or the whole class is on one subject. And it happens in all the classes I have. It's absolutely amazing. So it helps that a subject is brought up, explained and brought to conclusion. Okay. So January the 15th, 1911. This vest, look at the heading. You need to add the word vested. Vested interest is the poison of the priest. God is not understood by those who are not stripped of every one and everything. So the priests that won't leave their families and won't leave these businesses will never understand God, is what you're being told. Therefore, if they never understand God, how on earth can they lead anybody else to him? So continuing my usual state, Louisa said, my adorable Jesus made himself seen crying. He's weeping over these priests. The celestial mother brought him to me to calm him. And I tried to do as much as I could, kissing him, caressing him, squeezing him to myself and saying to him, what do you want from me? don't you want love to make you happy and keep you from crying? Now, usually he's a child if she's doing this. Have you yourself not told me at other times that your happiness is my love? And I love you very, very much. But I love you together with you because by myself, I don't know how to love you. Now, what she's saying there, it's just a little bit awkward. What she's saying is my human love is nothing. So in order to love you who are divine, I need divine love. So she's got to fuse into the divine will.
I love you with your will.
That's right. Yeah. No, but I love you with your own love.
Oh, yeah.
In the divine will. Yeah.
I will also love
you. Yeah. Because what she's saying is, I love you together with you because by myself I don't know how to love you. Give me your burning breath that it may melt my whole being into a flame of love And then I will love you for all. I will love you with all, and I will love you in the hearts of all. Okay. Now, the burning breath, of course, is the Holy Spirit. Ruach Adonai, Spirit of God. Give me your own spirit, and I will be able to love you for all. But who can tell all my nonsense, she says. She says nonsense when she's not completely sure of what she's saying. And then it seemed that he calmed down a little, and in order to distract my sweet love completely from crying, I said to him, my life and my all, be consoled. When they do the reunions of priests, oh, how consoled you will be. And he said, oh, really? Why do you think I'm crying? Immediately, he said, ah, my daughter, this vested interest or self-interest is the poison of the priest. And it, you have to add, has infiltrated so much into them as to poison their hearts, their blood. Now, poisoned blood kills. We call poisoned blood sepsis. It kills. It has poisoned their hearts. It has, that is their ability to love. It has poisoned their blood, which carries life around, and even the marrow of their bones. So therefore, they're destroyed. Oh, how well the devil weaves this. And having found in them a will disposed to be woven, my grace has used all of its art in order to form the weaving of love and to give them the counterpoison to interest, this vested interest. And not finding their will disposed. Now, see, that's the problem. If you are not disposed, you're not going to respond. And not finding their will disposed, it has woven little or nothing of the divine. So the devil, unable to prevent these houses of reunion of priests completely, because God has determined it's going to happen, with a great loss for him, contents himself at least with maintaining the web he has woven with the poison of interest. That means that the ones who actually do go into the houses of reunion of priests haven't let this go. So if I have cancer in the blood and I go from this house to next door, does the cancer go out of the blood?
Yeah.
No, I bring it with me. So if they have the cancer of self-interest in them and they go into the houses of reunion, then they still have the problem. That's what he's saying. Oh, if you saw how few are those who are disposed to separate from their families with their hearts also and to throw up this poison of self-interest, you'd cry with me. Don't you see how they fight among themselves in this regard and how they become agitated? You see, you know, from since volume one, the Lord has told us that agitation allows Satan in and that he only works when we are at peace. How they become all fire. That means that they're all angry and with each other. Even more, they believe this is nonsense, which does not befit their state. In other words, they don't accept the message of God through Louisa. So while he was saying this, I could see the priests who were disposed for this, how scarce was their number. Jesus disappeared and I found myself inside of myself. Now, feeling repugnance to write these things about priests and having made the sacrifice of doing it, because obedience wants it so, my beloved Jesus came afterwards and gave me a kiss to reward me for the sacrifice that I had made. And he said, and if you want to put a heading at this point, mistaken vocations he's going to talk about. In other words, mistaken vocations. In other words, they were shoved into the priesthood. We had that problem in Ireland, didn't we?
Yeah.
When I was young, it was totally accepted that one boy has got to go into the priesthood and one girl into religious life, and that's that. And once they had done that, they felt they gave their first fruits and the rest of them could enjoy life. That didn't mean that that boy or girl was called.
It was the definition of a so-called respectable family.
Exactly.
It was for...
Exactly. So it's a mistaken vocation. Jesus said, my beloved daughter, you've not said everything about the inconveniences which could arrive if the priest remains entangled in the bond of the family. the many mistaken vocations, because of which the church cries bitterly in these times. In other words, the church suffers. You see, Louisa uses this very simple language of cries bitterly. Now, the church is the whole body of Christ, and it doesn't cry. It suffers, okay, suffers bitterly. One would certainly not see so many modernists. Aha, now you see, for the first time, he's actually touching the problem. So many priests empty of true piety. They've no spiritual life. So many of them given to pleasures. So many to intemperance. So there's your drink problems. Many others who look to souls being lost as if it was nothing, without the slightest bitterness, and all the other absurdities that they do. These are signs of mistaken vocations. In other words, he doesn't have a clue that he has been called to take care of souls. And if the families see that there is nothing more to hope for from the priests, none of them will ever again feel like pushing their sons to become priests. You see the problem? Mm-hmm. Nor will the sons ever think of enriching and lifting their families up through their ministry. Now, this is a complete... Satan doesn't mind you being religious, so long as you worship him. Isn't it extraordinary? He absolutely doesn't mind you going to Mass at all. You can go 10 times a day if you want, so long as you're worshipping him. So you can worship him by gossiping about other people and sinning and receiving absolutely unworthily and so on and so forth. But you can go to church. He doesn't mind at all. And people don't grasp that. They just don't grasp it. So Louisa said, "Ah, my sweet Jesus, instead of telling these things to me," I love this, "go to the leaders," she says. In other words, go to the Pope. "And go to the bishops. They who have the authority can manage to content you on this point. But I am a poor little one. What can I do? I can only compassionate you, you know, and repair." Okay. Now, if you want to put a heading on the next paragraph, is crisis in the hierarchy. In other words, the problem is there as well. And this was written in time for the crisis that we're in. Okay. And Jesus said, "My daughter, go to the leaders, go to the bishops. The poison of vested interest has invaded everyone," because the bishops and the cardinals were landed gentry. It's invaded everyone. "And since almost all of them are taken by this pestilential fever," that's a spiritual fever, "they lack the courage to correct and to check those who depend on them." So, we now have the answer as to why there was no leadership given to us in all the referenda in which people voted wrongly. Okay. "And they lack the courage to correct and to check those who depend on them. And then, I am not understood by those who are not stripped of everything and of everyone." Would you please put VIP beside that? In other words, if we're not detached from the world, how on earth can we understand the Lord? We can't. "My voice resounds very badly to their hearing. Even more, it seems an absurdity to them, something that's not appropriate for the human condition. And if I speak with you, we understand each other very well, because Louisa was stripped of everything. And if nothing else, at least I can vent my sorrow talking to you, and you will love me more, because you and I, you know that I am embittered." Okay. Now, all this stripping of Louisa and detaching her from everything, volume one. If you want to put volume one beside it. Sorry, we're going to get priests until you get sick tonight. The next one is about priests as well. January the 17th, 1911. "The civilian leaders listen to Jesus more than the ecclesiastical ones." Now, isn't that upside down and backwards? Okay. So, "continuing my usual state, my always lovable Jesus came, but so afflicted and so burning with love that he was restless and asked for a refreshment." Now, to refresh Jesus, you've got to do something to give him souls. Okay. "And throwing his arms around my neck, he said, 'My daughter, give me love.'" Giving him love is not a physical thing of a kiss or a hug. It's that you do something in reparation to give him souls. Is that okay? This is the sole and only refreshment to calm my restless love. And then he added, daughter, what you wrote about the reunions of priests is nothing but a process that I am making with them. In other words, we're starting a kind of a reform among the priests. It's a process. It's not going to happen all of a sudden. If they listen to me, fine. But if they don't, since the leaders of the ecclesiastics won't listen to me, that means the Pope and the cardinals and the bishops. That's a church in crisis, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Because they too are bound by the laces of self-interest, and they too are slaves of human miseries, almost lapping them up. Instead of dominating over these miseries of self-interest, of high positions and the like, and the miseries dominate them. Either these problems get on top of us or we have to get on top of them. Therefore, since they are deafened by what is human, I will be neither understood nor listened to. So she told him to go to the Pope and the cardinals, and he says, look, it's a waste of time. Mm-hmm. I find that a rather interesting comment, do you?
Mm-hmm.
I will be neither understood nor listened to. But, you know, this wasn't new. I mean, when Our Blessed Lady wanted to tell something to the church, it was Bernadette of Lourdes, she said. A little unlettered person, totally poor, so poor that her family couldn't even survive. And then Our Lady went to Fatima.
Yeah, just
you know, it's little people.
Yeah.
People who are disposed to listen to God and who will open themselves up to a spiritual life. The thing that worries me when I read this is the judgment that priests and bishops and cardinals and popes will have.
Which is given to you and which is expected of you.
I wouldn't have their job for anything.
Oh, it's a tough one.
Yeah. So he said, because they are deafened by what is human, I will am neither understood nor listened to. I will turn to the civilian leaders who will listen to me more easily. Isn't that scary out? Because of their desire to see the priest humiliated, and also because maybe these are a little more stripped than the ecclesiastics themselves, in other words, more detached, my voice will be more listened to, and what they do not want to do out of love, I will make them do out of necessity by force, and I will make the government take away what is left. That is called the stripping of the papal states, which actually happened. So what he said was, I'll give permission to the secular folks to take the properties off you. And they did. But isn't that sad? That instead of listening to the Lord and following the Lord and having the glory of obedience, you know what I mean, that they had to be punished. And the Pope ended up a prisoner in the Vatican. Do you remember?
Yeah, that's right.
Louisa said, my highest and only good, what will be the name that you will give to these houses and what are the rules? Now, that's not coming from her. That's coming from the priest. Make sure you ask him.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. He said, the name will be the Houses of the Resurrection of the Faith. So that's what he wanted. The church is dead. She must rise. As for the rules, they can use the same rules as the oratory of St. Philip Neri. And then he added, would you tell Father B that you will be the organ and he the sound for this work. In other words, you'll produce the message. He has got to proclaim it. If he will be mocked and disliked by those who have their interests, the good and the few true good will understand the necessity and the truth that is announced, and they will make it a duty of conscience to get down to work. Besides, if he is mocked, he will have the honour of becoming more similar to me. Can you endure another one on priests? Because otherwise we'll have it next week. Isn't it amazing? Holy Jerusalem. Okay, so let's try January the 19th, 1911. Now, the messages that are coming to the priests through Louisa are coming from Jesus. Jesus is the eternal word. Okay, the word of God is eternal. That's in your heading. Do you see it? The word of God is eternal. So the priests have to be told that this isn't something you can just throw aside. In hearing of the difficulties raised by the priests, especially about the breaking of the bond with their families completely, now the word is completely, okay, and that it was impossible to carry this out in the way said by Blessed Jesus, that if this were true, he should speak to the Pope, Pius X, for he who has the authority could command everyone and sort this thing out. These are the priests producing this reaction. Louisa said, I was repeating all this to Blessed Jesus and lamenting to him, saying, my highest love, was I not right in telling you to go to the leaders and say these things? For if you say them to me, poor ignorant one, what can I do? And my always lovable Jesus said, my daughter, right, do not fear, I am with you. That's Joshua 1:5. Joshua, J-O-S-H, 1:5. my word is eternal. In other words, here we are in the third millennium reading the same thing, and it applies to the crisis that we have today. Do you see what he's saying? Mm-hmm. And what cannot do good here, that here is Italy, can do good elsewhere, that means in other countries. So if Italy doesn't respond, other countries will. What cannot be carried out in these times, that is in 1911, okay, will be carried out in other times. That means somebody reading this message will take it seriously. But this is how I want the priest, untouchable by the bond of the families. Okay? You do not know what the spirit of the priests of these times is. You don't know what they're like inside. And that's what Jesus' problem is, that he doesn't see a priest in them. He sees a secular man dressed as a priest. This spirit is nothing dissimilar from that of the worldly unbelievers, called the secular here. It's a spirit of revenge. God blesses in the priests. A spirit of hatred. You see, that goes with running their businesses and all the rest of it. A spirit of vested interest and of blood. My goodness, that you'd get to that stage. Now, having to live together, if one earns more than the other and does not leave it for the good of all, one will feel overtaken, one will feel defrauded, another humiliated, believing that he too would be good at making that earning. And therefore brawls and rancor and displeasures happen. They will even come to blows. That's not my image of a priest, is it?
I wonder, was the mafia involved?
It's just incredible, isn't it?
Yeah, blood.
So, your Jesus told you, and that is enough. You see, this is where he needs little people to listen to him. Okay. That's Psalm 68:11. Psalm 68:11. This point is necessary. It is the pillar. It is the foundation, it is the life, it is the nourishment of this work. And that is, they have to break from their families and they have to form communities. If it could work without it, I would not have insisted so much. Then, my daughter, take a look at how rough and ignorant of divine things that they are. I do not have their way of thinking. Now, that's Isaiah 55:8-10. Isaiah 55:8-10. My ways are not your ways. My thinking is as different from yours as the heavens is from the earth. Is that okay? I do not have their way of thinking, such that they go lapping up and crawling for dignities. Oh dear. John 5:44. And Matthew 16:18. So they're just looking for position, power and honour and glory. In communicating myself to souls, I do not look at dignities. Now, this statement is actually very, very important, but an NB beside it. When I'm communicating to souls, I don't care whether they are bishops or popes, but I look at whether they are stripped of everything and of everyone. In other words, the rule is the same right across the board. I look at whether everything in them is for love of me. Now, notice love is the most important issue. Why? Because God is love. I look at whether they have scruples about making themselves the masters of even one single breath, of one heartbeat. I want to give you 2 Corinthians 10:5. Every thought must be captured and given to Christ. In other words, they have to be completely given. That's your Deuteronomy 6, 4 to 10 as well. Okay. So he is demanding complete commitment from them. 2 Corinthians 10:5. And in finding them all love, I do not look at whether they are ignorant, abject, poor, despised, or made of dust. Dust itself I can convert to gold. Ephesians 2:10. Ephesians 2:10. We are God's work of art. I can convert dust into gold. I can transform it in me. I can communicate all of myself to it. I can entrust my most intimate secrets to it. I can make it share in my joys and in my sorrows. This is the dust. This is the ignorant one. Okay. So this ignorant, abject, poor, despised person is someone who is free of the world and free of vested interest and free of self-importance, and therefore they're really open to God. Okay. Even more, since they live in me by virtue of love, in other words, we've been told since volume one that love is the center and the only motivation, it's no wonder that they are aware of my will about souls and about my church. In other words, because they're in this position, it's very easy for them to know God and to know what he wants. The next sentence, I have to give it to you in English. Their life is one with mine. Their will and light, the will and the light are one. The will of God and the light of God is God. They're all one. With which they see the truth according to the divine visions, not according to the human level. So, since their life is one with God, then the divine will and the divine light is what gives them the ability to read the truth according to God. Is that okay? Mm-hmm. So that's Psalm 36:9. So he said, this is why I do not toil in communicating myself to these souls, and I raise them up with all dignity. He doesn't have to toil with them because they're open to him. Okay. So the next paragraph is very interesting. The so-called crime, in inverted commas, of love. The so-called crime of love. Then clasping me and kissing me, Jesus told me, my beloved daughter, but beautiful of my own beauty, you afflict yourself because of the things they say, but don't afflict yourself. Ask Father B, poor child of mine, how much he suffered because of me, from his superiors, from his brothers and from the others, to the point of declaring him a fool, an enchanter, and of making it a duty for themselves to penalize him. So the poor priest is suffering because he's trying to do this. And what was his crime? Love. But it's love with the capital L, because it's divine love. Feeling ashamed of their lives compared to his, they wage war on him and still do. Now notice the reason why. He's showing them up. Ah, yes. How costly is the crime of love. Love costs me much, and it costs my dear children much. But I love this priest so much, and because of what he has suffered, I have given him myself as a reward. Isn't that wonderful? Yeah. And I dwell in him, 1 Corinthians 3:16. Poor son of mine, they don't leave him alone. They spy on him everywhere, because which they don't do to others, to find, who knows, some matter on which to correct him and mortify him. But since I am with him, I render their arts vain. Isn't that wonderful?
Yeah.
Give him courage. Oh, how terrible will be the judgment I will make on those who dare to mistreat my children. Wow. Now, he's talking about priests persecuting priests. But the one who does his will and who loves him is his child. So it's not the clothes that make the priest. Is that okay? So we'll leave it there for tonight. That was a lot on priests, wasn't it?